Thank you.
All right. Let's see, where are we here? You always seem to have more buttons to press. I just want to make sure everybody's online.
Want to shut the door? I'll
Yeah, do
close
you
it.
mind getting that? Thanks, Jean. And you can flip the lights on too. There we go. Add a little light to it, a dreary day. Good to see you guys. Okay, we're going to take a minute like we usually do. Just kind of settle in. And it's amazing kind of what happens is it's almost like we flip a channel selector. And we go from sitting in our living room to being in the upper room. Isn't that interesting? Without effort, just there. So I'm going to ask you if you care to close your eyes, take a couple of breaths. And ask yourself this question. What would it be like if I were perfectly free in this moment? What would it be like if I were perfectly free in this moment? And just breathe into that sensation. Don't have to label it. Don't have to analyze it. Breathe into that sensation. Let it flow with you and to you, through you. Gentle, yet powerful. Peaceful, yet creative. I am here. I am here. I am here. And everyone who has touched us and whom we have touched on our spiritual journey is here today also. You can take another deep breath if you like. Stretch a bit. Allow yourself to soften, open. And you can open your eyes if you're ready. Morning. You doing?
Staying back, even though I probably shouldn't have it, because I had it like weeks ago.
Okay. We will send you some light.
Thank you.
Actually, we'll send it right now.
He's telling us
We
this
don't
morning.
have to wait.
He's telling us this morning. Well, I'm not
You
sick.
don't have to wait.
Thank you, Gary.
You're welcome. Thank you for being here. I'm going to begin on page 45. And we are working from the book, Paul Selig's book, the Book of Innocence. And we're going to be starting a new class on Friday evening. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to send that link to everybody who's connected to us on either Tuesday or Sunday morning. So you can click in if you want to or not. I'm not going to be insulted if you're not there. But I know some people will be able to make it sometimes. Sometimes we might not be able to make it, but that'll be part of the shtick. Everybody will get that link from our Tuesday group and from our Sunday morning group, and you can sign in at will. Okay. And the book we're going to be using at that particular juncture of our learning together is called Alchemy. And if you're very anal retentive, you'll think that all the books have to come in order, that you can't move them around, but you can, because the beautiful part of these books, as well as other spiritual works like Course in Miracles and things like that, is they work with you where you are. It's not like you have to be someplace or do something to be able to, or you have to jump through these hoops in order to be able to get over here. You're already there, as somebody mentioned on Tuesday night. That's one of the paradoxes of spiritual growth. You're already there. You're already exactly where you need to be, but you're also moving to where you need to be. You're doing both at the same time. And the mind cannot quite understand that, but that's okay, because the mind is not meant to understand that, but my soul can. So just as a reflection of that, my grandson Finn was in from Chicago this weekend, and we spent Friday night all day Saturday eating junk food and watching movies.
Wonderful. Any good movies you can recommend?
And reinforcing our positive, healthy, wonderful relationship with one another. And so Finn is just about getting ready to be on his way home to Chicago. He would have joined you, but he's didn't want to miss his plane. So maybe next time. We have a wonderful relationship. And we both acknowledge that it goes beyond words, but it's special. So page 45, to pick up where we left off. Your ideas of who you are in most ways relational. In other words, I am this to that. I'm a teacher. I'm not really, but I'm just a rent-a-mouth, but I could say that I'm a teacher. Okay. Well, I have to have students to be a teacher, right? Or whatever label it is we're putting on ourselves is in relationship to someone or something else. I'm a wife, I'm a mother, I'm a grandmother, I'm a grandfather, I'm this and that. All of the labels we have are relational because they are related to someone or something else outside of us. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. That's just a very limited way of defining ourselves, or a limited way of letting ourselves be defined. The obstructions to realization that we are teaching you now are artifacts in memory that can and will be reborn or re-seen in the upper room. Give you a very simple example of that. I know I've shared this one before, but it's interesting because I just started talking about my grandson. A couple of years ago, well, let's see, he's 17 now. Can't imagine that. He's getting ready for college. I remember changing his diapers, okay. I remember, though, a few years ago when he was probably about 10 or 11, instead of calling me Grandpa Jerry, which is what my other grandchildren called me, he started calling me Jerry. And at first, I was a little bit insulted. He wasn't showing me the proper respect of an elder. But I didn't confront him with that. I just let him do what he was doing. And what dawned on me was that by calling me Jerry instead of Grandpa Jerry, he was changing the relationship. Instead of being just a grandson, he was looking at me as being an equal, a friend, a partner. And I went, wow, do I want to spoil that? Not on your life. So he can continue to call me whatever he wants to, but he still calls me Jerry, which is fine with me. But he changed the dynamics of the relationship by changing the name he was calling me. And by doing that, he raised, for me anyway, he raised the level of vibration of that relationship. It's not a static definable one of I'm your grandson, you're my grandfather. It's I'm your friend, I'm your buddy, I'm your partner in this, and we are changing ourselves together. And I went, wow, I think I'll take that one. We'll be reborn or re-seen in the upper room. Now, he didn't read that book. He didn't read the Book of Innocence, but he decided he knew what that meant. I am redoing, re-seeing, re-looking, reborn this relationship. We will offer you this now if you wish it. There is nothing that was once seen that cannot be re-seen from a higher perspective. Nothing. Even people in our lives, people we can't stand in our lives. I can still re-see that relationship. I can see it. I can experience it being reborn if I'm open to that. So I go to one of my favorite Ram Dass stories where he was, explaining that during the Reagan administration, he had a very difficult time with the Department of Defense of Caspar Weinberger. I don't even remember Caspar at all, but he remembered him. And he said, at first I started thinking that this is an evil person. And I said, that's not doing me any good. It's not doing him any good. This is a person who's doing some evil things, or what I'm judging as being some evil things. And how do I change that relationship? So he said, every morning I have a little altar that I go to, a puja, it's called in Hindu language. And I have statues there and picture of my guru. And every morning I sit down in front of cross-legged in front of my little altar, say, good morning, Babaji. Good morning, Jesus. Good morning, Mary. Good morning, Buddha. Good morning, Kuan Yin. And he said, I took a little picture of Caspar Weinberger and I put it on my altar. And I said, good morning, Caspar. And as soon as I said that, I realized how far I have to go, right, to be able to look at this person as being one with me. So I have a, guess who I have on my altar? You don't have to guess, you can imagine. I've got some people on my altar like that. But it's really interesting because I have the same impression. I go, good morning, Donald. And then I realize how far I have to go in order to be able to be one with this being. I have to drop all of the labels. I have to drop all of the history. I have to drop all of the judgments. I have to drop all of the comparisons in order to be able to fit this person in my relationship box. We offer you this now if you wish it. There is nothing that is once seen that cannot be re-seen from a higher perspective. We did not invalidate the view from the first floor. That's another thing I really like about these books. It doesn't throw anything away. We don't say, oh, well, you can't have a relationship with him. Or let's suppose you say this, I can't have a relationship with his personality or his ego. My ego might not be able to do that, but I can still have a relationship with this person by knowing that they are not their ego, they're not their personality. I know this is not who you are. I can have a relationship with knowing who you truly are, even though I don't understand that yet. We did not invalidate the view from the first floor. But if you go up to the 25th floor, the view of what was lower is seen from a very different perspective. We encountered this teaching years ago when we were working with Paul Selig's book, I Am the Word. We had an image that came to my mind was, let's suppose you're in a shopping mall at Christmas time, and it's chaotic. People are running this way and running that way and bumping into one another and trying to grab this and trying to grab that and hopefully, and the line getting coffee at Starbucks is about a mile long. So you're having a little bit of a difficult time with all of this riffraff going on. And all of a sudden, you look over to one side and there's an elevator door. You say, I think I'll try that. And so you go over by the elevator door, you get on, and there's only one button, it's floor number two. You press the button, you get off of the floor, and you look over on a balcony, and you look at all of this activity that you were once a part of about 5 minutes ago. But now you're looking down on it from the upper floor, from an upper floor, and you're saying, wow, I was so caught up in that. I thought that was real. I thought that was really who I am. Now I'm looking at it from another viewpoint. It's still going on, but it's not going on with me now. It's still going on, but I'm not identified with it. It's something else that other people are involved with, but not me at this particular moment. And what they're suggesting is we can do that with anything. I don't have to let anything interfere with my understanding of the truth of who I am. Now, if you're like me, you're going to get distracted. Probably going to happen as soon as you walk out those doors there. I'm going to walk out those doors and say, well, do I want to go to the sanctuary? Or do I want to go home? Well, I want to go home, but I should be in the sanctuary. So all sorts of things are going to start going. That's not going on with me right now, but all sorts of things could be going on with me as soon as I walk out of those doors. Isn't it kind of amazing that I'm walking in this particular space? You want to call it the higher consciousness, the upper room, whatever you want to call it. We walk into this particular space, and all of a sudden, all of that other stuff just sort of, like the snow, just sort of melts. Where'd all the snow go? Sort of melted away. It's not part of who I am. Not part of who you are. Now, one of my goals is being able to reach that state of consciousness without having to consciously just kind of put the brakes on and say, stop. But have it that be sort of being in the natural flow of my life and the natural flow of yours and the natural flow of our relationship with one another.
Hey, Jerry.
Yeah, Jim.
So I've always said this before, when you share that, it just reminds me to remind myself, in the world, but not of it. As I walk through my experiences, whether they're good, not as good, or everything in between, I'm walking through this journey with a mindfulness of not being attached. So walking through this mindfully, reminding myself to be d detached. And I have to say to myself, I can be detached and still be compassionate and caring. So I can do two things at the same time, but I'm just really just mindful, just in terms of, okay, what is it I'm observing? And how is this making me feeling, and perhaps maybe going to the next one, why, or maybe not even going to why, just I'm just kind of observing my energy on this, and just okay, well, okay, I got it. All right, so in it, but not of it. Thanks.
And so that every moment can be a moment of discovery.
Yes, sir.
And what the Buddhists call that is mindfulness. I am aware. Every moment I am in the now moment. I am in awareness. I am in mindfulness. And in the next moment, I am mindful. Next moment is going to be a different sort of mindfulness. But it's not a definition. I'm just there. And again, and again, and again, and again. Until that becomes a definition of who I am. I am loving awareness. That's one of my mantras. I am loving awareness. That's it. I don't have to be anything else. Don't have to worry about being that the next step. I am loving awareness. So are you. We are re-identifying you each beyond the ideas of self that you have utilized to foster identity and reclaiming you each in a new way. How can I see this differently? How can I see you differently? We are re-identifying you each beyond the ideas of self you have utilized to foster identity and reclaiming you each in a new way. When you are relying on memory to tell you who you have been, you reinforce these ideas and you recreate them unintentionally. In other words, you define yourself in terms of your past and you stay stuck there without realizing it. The small self knows itself through history. It's just the way, that's just the way it works. It has been appropriated by history. But even your history is your perception of history. It's not really what happened. Small self knows itself through history. It's been appropriated through history. And all that stands in the way of the present moment is your memory of what was and how that plays out in your idea of present time. So when we, let's suppose when we become absorbed in working with a text like this one, for example, I'm not thinking about being absorbed in this book. I just am. I'm not thinking about being, I'm not forcing myself to being absorbed in a particular sense of truth or an idea. I just am. I'm not questioning this. I'm not struggling with it. I'm not saying, now what does that mean? I don't understand. I'm just here. And I allow myself to be here, and we allow ourselves to be here together with who we are. That's another beautiful thing that happens. Is not it, none of this is about my relationship with you or your relationship with me. It's about our relationship with one another and how we create that and how we allow that to be part of our lives at this particular moment. All that stands in the way of the present moment is your memory of what was and how that plays out in your idea of present time. It's like sitting down looking at a family photo album and just kind of flipping one from one page to another. And you go, oh, that's who I was, but it's not who I am. I wonder if I can hold some of those other people in that same kind of light. Well, that's who I thought you were. Who are you now? Not just how do you perceive yourself, but what kind of vibration are you using to define the sense of truth of who you are in this moment? Now, there is memory in the upper room, but it is not tainted. That's pretty heavy. It is not meaning to claim you in different ways. You understand what was. You accept what was. You have made choices based in this, and indeed will continue to. But you are no longer framing your reality through an identity that was fostered in shadow. You are no longer claiming your identity that was fostered in shadow, in limitation, maybe it would be another word to use there. A definition of self shrouded in limitation. If you understand that the one who has known poverty and continues to fear poverty is making choices in fear, the one who believes he cannot be loved holds his history of lovelessness and his memory of it as a shield that would stop him from receiving love and already in the present. If I am defining myself as a person in the past who is unlovable, then I am blocking the love that is coming my way. And I have to, that's a question that I continually ask myself. Am I blocking the love that is coming my way? Am I blocking the truth that is coming my way? And that's not a judgment. That's an awareness. what is getting in the way? Maybe that would be a way of putting it for me. What is getting in the way of my being loved as unconditionally as I possibly could be? What is getting in my way?
Jerry,
Yes, Paul.
I was kind of struck. I don't know what exactly a few minutes ago you said, I'm sorry, but it made me realize how very we are,
Can you see?
how very much we are not in the moment.
Okay.
When you really realize that I was just how many different things are going through your mind and how much autopilot we're on. It strikes me, I mean, I'm just hit with how I so am into wanting to be really mindful and be in the present moment, which is all there is. But then there was something you were talking about. I can't even remember just a few minutes ago, but I realized how much we aren't, and how we could go through a day, and really, when you're doing little things, what are you really thinking about? It all of a sudden feels even deeper than I've always felt it was deep. When you're talking about different things with our Trump and what we're thinking about and our ego, and I don't know, it hit me deeper, something you said of how much discipline it takes to be just in the moment of really washing a dish. Are you really thinking about washing the dish?
Okay. The simplest reflection I have on that, Paula, is consciously making every action and every thought an act of love. I can choose that. I can be aware of that as best I can. Making every action, every thought, an act of love. Am I going to be able to do that constantly, consistently through the rest of my life? Probably not. But here's our choice again. When I become awake or become aware again, I can either be joyful and grateful for being awake or beat myself up for falling asleep. I think from my perspective, which is obviously limited because it's just mine, I believe this is kind of the rhythm of the universe, the beating of your heart, the rhythm of your breathing, the being awake or being asleep, being joyful, being sad, this constant movement of through duality into oneness, duality into oneness, duality into one. Until there's no movement at all, until we're just one. But there's no blame, shame, or guilt because every step that I take in awareness is another step into the truth of who I am and the truth of who you are. It might seem overly simple, but that's the best I can put it.
Jerry, I don't know if you can hear me.
Yeah.
Just a quick addition to your point. Daniel Kahneman has done research that suggests there are two parts of ourselves. One is the remembered self, and one is the experienced self. And I think a lot of what we are talking about and what Paula is talking about is not the remembered self, but the experienced self. And getting out of our heads to being in the present moment means in a sense, forgetting who we are to be who we are. And so, that's one part of this. And I think it's a constant challenge because who we think we are informs our behavior. But really, it's being in the moment, being in the upper room, and that helps everything else out.
And here again, we are presented with another paradox in some ways. When I'm in experience, I'm not thinking about being in experience. I am in the experience. In fact, I'm not just in the, I am the experience. But I'm not reflecting on being the experience. That happens a split second later after go, oh yeah, right? And then all of a sudden, instead of being in the experience, I am kind of outside the window looking in. And then I take a deep breath and I go, I can't force myself to be back into the experience of, let's say, the experience of being loved unconditionally. That's like something we've all experienced that at one time or another. At least I hope so. Being in the experience of being loved unconditionally. And then there's a split second of realization of kind of aware, oh, I am being loved unconditionally. I sort of pop out of the experience and I get into the observer of the experience. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just a reflection of my own limitation. Of I guess when you're, how did, remember that in the play, Our Town, Thornton Wilder? It was one of the characters. Well, the main character was called the stage manager, who was sitting on top of a ladder, who was really playing God. And one of the characters in the play was a young girl named Emily, who died young. And she asked the stage manager, "Can I come back? Can I come back to life for a day? I wanted to be the happiest day of my life." And he said, "Okay, we can do that." He said, "I will put you back in time to the day of your 16th birthday." She said, "That would be wonderful." Poof, you're back in your 16th birthday. And so she walks into the living room, and her dad is fixing a watch. The family was in difficult financial straits, and so the dad took on some extra work of fixing watches, what he was doing, fixing a watch. And Emily said, "Oh, Dad, it's so good to see you." He said, "Emily, happy birthday. I love you, honey, but I'm really busy fixing this watch. I'll talk to you later." Sort of like Cats in the Cradle with Harry Chapin. I'll do this later. So she went into the kitchen. In the kitchen, here's your mother whipping up this batter for her birthday cake. She said, "Oh, Mom, it's so wonderful to be here on my 16th birthday." She said, "Oh, I love you too, honey, but I'm really busy making your cake." And a couple of other incidents like that, and she finally turns to the stage manager. She said, "Take me back. It's too painful to be a human being." Does anybody really get it? And he said, "Saints and some poets." Saints and some poets are in that state of awareness, not looking at that state of awareness, but in that state of awareness. And we're not reflecting on that, I just am. So if I were to look at, let's say if I were to look in Mother Teresa's eyes, for example, I'm presuming that for the most part, especially of the latter part of her life, she was the experience. I am the experience. What is your job in life? She was asked. And she said, "To see the Christ in all his distressing disguises. That's my experience of life. From day to day, from minute to minute, to minute to minute to minute." You can't force that to happen. It happens because you are in a state of consciousness to allow that to happen. So that's another point of view we can take here this morning, is to be receptive, to be soft, to be open, to be receptive of the grace that has come. What is the grace that is coming your way right now? What is the love that is coming your way right now? What is the peace? What is the joy? What is the happiness that is coming to you right now? Maybe we just, this is not the full meditation this morning, but maybe we just do that for a minute. If you could close your eyes for a minute and ask yourself that question. What is the love that is coming to me in this moment? What is the love that is coming to me at this moment? Oh, it's right here. It's right here. It's right here. I am in the experience of receiving love, no matter what the source. Just get a sense of that. Breathe it into your being. Let it touch every cell and fiber of you, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. I am being loved. I am in the experience of being loved. That's all there is. Nothing else at this moment. I am in the experience of being loved. If you understand that the one who has known poverty and continues to fear poverty is making choices in fear, the one who believes he cannot be loved holds his history of lovelessness and his memory of it as a shield that would stop him from receiving love that is already present. When you release the idea of who you have been, you are not releasing what happened. You're releasing the misidentification of self through a trajectory born in memory and agreed to in a collective way through a culture that ascribes great meaning to an idea of what was. You are not your history. See where we are this time. Okay. I'll do one more paragraph and then we can do our regular meditation. But I think this will fit. We will explain this further if we are allowed. Any history that you may hold invokes the identity of others as participants in the same play. So in other words, everybody else is caught up in your history. The way you perceive it is caught up in your history as well. My father's legacy, my mother's legacy, their parents and their cultures. The legacy of the collective indeed informs your present self. We don't deny these things. After I had left the brothers that I was part of for 27 years of my life, I had somebody ask me, "Are you still a Catholic?" And I stopped for a moment and I said, "Well, I'm not sure whether the Pope thinks so or not, but I still do." I said, "You ask me if I'm still a Catholic is like asking me if I'm still Irish, right? It's part of my heritage, part of my culture. Generation after generation. I don't stop that just because I've become aware of another layer of consciousness. I recognize that some of those things are part of my heritage to begin with anyway. The legacy of the collective indeed informs your idea of present self. We don't deny these things. But when you have continued to claim a history born in a faulty narrative, by the way, all history is a faulty narrative because it's only your perception of what was. And everybody else who has experienced even the same thing or the same incident is probably going to have a different perspective. We don't deny these things. But when you have continued to claim a history born in faulty narrative, one that was claimed by others in agreement to what they were taught, when you release the need to perpetuate an identity born in accruing misinformation about the self and who others have been to you, when you release the need to claim identity through past ideas, you move fully into the present moment, where indeed all things may be made new. The only way I can live in the present moment is by letting go of the past. I can't be in the present moment if I am still defining myself in terms of the past. Again, we're not making that into a judgment. We're saying my openness to the truth of who I am resides in my ability to let go of my past, to let go of my attachment to my history, because that is not who I am. It never was who I am. So we're going to take a few minutes. You can put your stuff down. And close your eyes if you like. Deep breath. Allow yourself to soften, dropping some of that body armor that we hold onto around our stomach area or abdomen. Lots of tightness there without even remembering or thinking about it. It's there. So just kind of breathe in to say it's okay to relax. It's okay to be at peace. It's okay to be vulnerable. Allow yourself to experience gentleness, softness. And allow yourself to be open to the presence of love. Unconditional love. I am in the presence of unconditional love. And as I am in the presence of unconditional love, I am being unconditionally loved. There is nothing I have to do differently, nothing I have to change. I am in the presence of unconditional love. And if you're willing to stretch that a little bit further, you can say to yourself, I am unconditional love. I am unconditional love. I always have been unconditional love. I always will be unconditional love. And notice the spaciousness that you have created, or that we have created together, that allows us to hold everyone and everything in unconditional love. And even though I might be distracted during this day, it does not change the truth of who I am. I am unconditional love. The rhythm of your breathing is unconditional love. The beating of your heart is unconditional love. My life is unconditional love. Every cell, every particle of my being resonates with the energy of unconditional love. Breathing deeply on a conscious level as you bring yourself back to this level of reality, which is also unconditional love. Taking a deep breath, another deep breath, stretching a bit, and opening your eyes when you're ready.
Hey, Jerry.
Yeah.
If I can add everything you said, and I three words after I am unconditional love, no matter what.
Thank you, Jim. I am unconditional love, no matter what. Thank you all for being here. We'll see you again soon.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for all of you.
Love you guys.
Thank you for all you are.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, guys. See you again soon.